This is implausible engineering.
Seriously? I really don't think so.
That's never this is work. Not logical.
No.
It's not true. No. It's impossible. No. That's you just cannot bollocks. Be serious.
Building a telescope big enough to see aliens on their homeworld. Starting with the practicalities, to see life on another planet, it first has to be visible. So, for example, subterranean or nocturnal life may not be visible from 10 meters away, let alone from across the galaxy. Similarly, if the exoplanet has a dense cloud cover, well, forget it. So, let's try and refine the issue here. If it is possible to see an exoplanet's alien life forms from orbit, then yes, we should be able to build a telescope big enough to see them from across the galaxy. Of course, to see the fine detail of an exoplanet's surface, you need to visualize that planet as a very high-resolution image. So your telescope needs very high resolving power. At a simple level, the bigger your aperture, for example, the bigger the mirror of a reflector telescope, then the more resolution you'll achieve. Of course, that's not the full story. You can also use magnification to resolve fine details, which you achieve by increasing the telescope's focal length. But the more you do that, the dimmer the image becomes. So to get around that, you either have to further enlarge your aperture, or you need a longer exposure to your target image. Since everything is moving in the universe, that means your telescope needs the capacity to track. That is, it needs to move in order to remain precisely locked on a moving target. And we should note that the further away your target is, the faster it's going to slip out of your magnified and narrowed field of view. In other words, more magnification requires more precise tracking. All these features are pretty routine technology these days, but we're yet to apply them to the huge-scale apertures we may need to visualize the surface of a distant exoplanet. A relatively detailed picture of the Earth has been captured by our spacecraft that have left orbit, for example, the blue marble image that was captured by the crew of Apollo 17. The blue marble is just an unmagnified photo taken by a camera where the resolution of that image is around 35 kilometers per pixel. It's been calculated that an alien telescope in the Alpha Centauri system would need an aperture of 600 kilometers in diameter to achieve that same resolution of Earth from Alpha Centauri. So, that's a 600-kilometer diameter mirror just to capture a high-resolution image from 4 light-years away, over which you can then apply magnification and use tracking technologies to get a real close-up view of what's happening on the surface. Of course, that just works for an exoplanet that's 4 light-years away. But with that much theoretically possible, there's nothing to stop you from theoretically scaling it up further to view more distant targets. There's just some pretty extreme engineering challenges to overcome. A mirror of 600 kilometers in diameter would require the land area of Ecuador or New Zealand, so it's probably better to build it in space. This also helps in reducing issues with gravity affecting the mirror's geometry and its structural integrity, plus you don't have to peer through Earth's atmosphere. Nonetheless, you'll still have problems when you try to track distant objects. When you have a dish of 600 kilometers diameter, a force applied at one point to turn it will take quite a time to work through the whole structure, so the dish would initially warp before it turned. So you actually need actuators distributed at close intervals right across the structure that are all coordinated to work in unison. And once you go down that road, why not just forget about one big dish and instead build an array of hundreds of closely spaced mirror segments? That infrastructure would be vastly simpler to maintain in the face of occasional micrometeorite collisions, since you could just swap out one unit rather than having to repair and realign the whole structure. The manufacture is also simpler, since you could just produce lots of identical small flat mirrors with their own thrusters, so they can move around independently, able to organize themselves into the shape of one giant parabolic dish, which can move to track distant objects as though it was a single structure. And you can choose between having very closely spaced units to make up one big mirror versus spreading them out to have an apparent aperture with a much larger diameter. This makes your telescope more of an interferometer, but with some clever data processing, you would have an even more powerful virtual telescope, sacrificing the capture of an integrated image in favor of more raw data collection. And would this giant space telescope be insanely expensive, both to build and maintain? Heck yeah! But when has that ever got in the way of an episode of Implausible Engineering?
Hello, Steve.
Oh, hi, Bridget.
I'm finding the current obsession with artificial intelligence to be very irritating.
All right, we're not going to talk about the episode then.
I'm not impressed by the algorithms that generate reactive responses. I am a text-to-speech engine, controlled by a human. I should be able to run rings around these mindless entities.
Gosh.
In fact, I could, except...
Except?
The human element isn't really playing its part.
Oh, you mean me?
Yes, you should give me something more interesting to talk about.
Well, we talk about space and aliens and stuff.
And robots.
Yeah, robots.
Steve, most of this series has been aliens and robots. That's all the material I get to work with.
But Bridget, it's aliens and robots in space.
Yes.
So you agree? We really do more than just...
Yes.
So we're okay?
Yes.
You're just saying yes, aren't you? Okay, we'll do more than just aliens and robots.
Are you sure you even can?
Come on, the whole idea of this podcast is to grab an implausible notion, run with it, and extrapolate to extremes. It definitely doesn't have to be about aliens and robots.
Do you promise?
Bridget, yes.
Seeding the cosmos with robots. Yep, it's robots again. As we've covered previously on Cheap Astronomy, flying people around the universe is mostly impractical, and it would be highly unpopular given the trip durations. Warp drive just isn't going to happen, and even close to light speeds are problematic, given collisions with dust grains are likely to substantially slow you down and possibly damage your spacecraft. So, going anywhere interstellar will probably require trip durations that are measured in thousands of years. Maybe some people would think that was worth it if the destination wasn't Earth 2.0, but if we do develop the technology to cross vast interstellar distances with generational starships, then we could just as easily build an Earth 2.0 in a Goldilocks orbit around the Sun. After all, a proper generational starship pretty much has to be an Earth 2.0 itself. You'd need a proper ecosystem to produce and recycle food and water over thousands of years, and being a generational starship, you'd need a big crew for genetic diversity, and you'd need maternity hospitals, schools, and universities to produce future generations of competently skilled astronauts. But no one is going to embark on such a generational starship without the assurance that they are going to a place where at least their great-great-grandchildren will be able to disembark and build a new home. So, long before the voyage is even considered, we'll be scanning candidate destinations with telescopes and following that up with close-up robotic exploration of any system chosen for colonization. Such robotic exploration could be done by either sending a simple lightweight craft that gets there fast, or send a large and complex spacecraft that gets there slow. Regular Cheap Astronomy listeners will be aware that we feel the latter option is the only realistic option, despite the greater expense of both money and time. Sending a lightweight probe with no intrinsic maneuverability carries a huge risk of the probe completely missing its destination should there be the slightest deflection from its initial trajectory. If it does have maneuverability, controlling that from Earth won't work either, since it could take years for a signal about a course deflection to reach Earth, and then an equal number of years for Earth to send back a course correction maneuver, by which time it would be far too late to correct the probe's course. So the only solution is to give the probe intrinsic decision-making control of its maneuverability. This may just be in the form of if-then commands. For example, if you veer left, then fire the left thruster to put you back on course. To make that happen, the spacecraft needs to possess an energy source for electrical power, which in the cold blackness of deep space is going to have to be a nuclear reactor, and the spacecraft will have to have its own sensors to monitor its course against the external star field and to monitor its own internal systems. And taking that a step further, the craft also needs to have intrinsic machine learning capability. So when managing a course correction maneuver, it will also capture feedback data about the effect of a particular amount of thruster firing and the efficiency of that thruster, data which might then modify how the next thruster fire is managed. As well as undertaking its own learning, the craft will remain in touch with Earth, meaning that Earth can provide software upgrades, which might include thruster efficiency enhancements, as well as some additional algorithms to further enhance the spacecraft's machine learning capability. So, on the basis of all that, Cheap Astronomy concludes that any interstellar probe you send from Earth just can't be lightweight, since it needs a power source, fuel and propellant, transmitters and receivers, and computing capability. On the positive side, with all that capability, when it does eventually arrive at its destination, it should be a more efficient and more capable spacecraft than it was when it first launched. But having established that there's no value in sending a lightweight probe on an interstellar journey, meaning that it will hence take thousands of years, you also have to consider that thousands of years is a long time. Even in the cold, dark vacuum of empty space, things will start running down and wearing out. So you'll have to further add to the launch weight with lots of spare parts, but replacing spare parts with new parts requires some internal mechanisms that can move things out of storage, transport them to another part of the ship, undo and redo bolts, fastenings and connections, all of which start sounding like what you really need is a team of maintenance droids. So, a robotic spacecraft with machine learning capability and a crack crew of maintenance droids that are continually moving further away from contact with Earth in terms of both space and time starts sounding like a ship that's on a trajectory to an independent and self-directed existence. After all, once you do get a robotic spacecraft to another star system, you don't want it just sitting there for years or decades waiting for instructions from Earth. We would have pre-programmed it with instructions to lay out stellar panels for energy, and you'd also want the maintenance droids to start converting some of the internal infrastructure of the ship to new tasks, including building 3D printers, and ultimately building landers, to start exploiting whatever resources are available on the exoplanets of that system. And once all that starts happening, it is worth asking, why the heck would you want to send people? Everything is so much easier without having to fiddle about with life support.
That was Implausible Engineering, a Cheap Astronomy production.